Hey, welcome back. You know, I don't always get to church on Sunday, and if I miss church, I throw on this record. I'll Take You There by the Staple Singers. It's like the next best thing to going to church. George Norrie and friends are coming to St. Louis, kind of a homecoming for George, and it's going to be a special evening. You can join George and friends at the Lindenwood University on Sunday, June the 18th, for a live stage show including UFO expert Stanton Friedman, rock historian R. Gary Patterson, and 97.1's own Mark Farley and Mark Close. Enjoy music from the Jim Manley Band and much more. Tickets on sale now. Get all the details at 971talk.com. 971.com. That's George Norrie and friends coming home to St. Louis. All right. Let me before we get into open lines, let me share with you a story. Last Sunday night, I did my weekly radio show, and it was with Paul Davids, who's been on Coast recently with George Knapp, and he wrote a book or co-authored a book called "An Atheist in Heaven," in which he details an incredible story, an incredible case of after-death communication with Forrest J. Ackerman, who was a science fiction writer and a literary agent and the editor of Famous Monsters of Filmland, which if you grew up in the 50s and the 60s, I mean, that was, you know, an incredible magazine and inspired a lot of filmmakers. Anyway, so Paul Davids is detailing this incredible series of incidents involving what he believes is genuine after-death spirit communication between him and his dear late friend Forrest J. Ackerman. And so Monday, I'm up and I'm downstairs in my office working away, and I get a call from my wife, the mighty Aphrodite. She calls me and she's in a bit of a panic. She'd been to the bank. She gets back to her car in the parking lot and she can't find her cell phone. And she thought, okay, she checks her purse, she checks the inside of the car, the glove box, etc. Empties her pockets, turns her pockets inside out. This is what she's telling me on the phone. No cell phone. So then she says, I must have left it in the bank. So she goes back in the bank, makes inquiries, no cell phone. Now remember, she has turned the pockets inside out in her jacket. She gets back into the car, and now she's thinking, oh no, what do I do now? Where could I have left the cell phone? Just then, she feels the cell phone in her jacket pocket. That same pocket, moments ago, that excuse me, that she had turned inside out. So immediately she calls me, and she had no knowledge of the previous night's radio program. Great, my wife doesn't listen to my own radio show. She was tired, she fell asleep, she didn't hear the show, so she had no idea that I was talking with Paul Davids about this after-death communication and some of the incidents involved reappearing or disappearing and reappearing objects in this investigation with Paul Davids, one of which included a cell phone. Actually, she had no idea that we had talked about that on the radio, on my radio program the night before, and she's calling me on the phone and she is in a panic, and she said to me, what the hell is going on? And I thought, ah, could Forrest J. Ackerman be at it again? So I thought I'd throw that log on the fire as we begin open lines on Coast to Coast AM and ask you about your experiences with disappearing and reappearing objects. We'll do that in just moments, if you're game, right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, let's embark on our two-hour open line tour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. We begin east of the Rockies. Michael is in beautiful Virginia Beach. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
And thank you for your beautiful voice, Richard Serrett. You know, one of the biggest disappearing objects that I've been looking for years showed up tonight on Coast to Coast, and his name is John Hutchinson. Thank you so much, Richard, for bringing him back to the show.
He's an interesting character, to be sure.
I I have to say that this man is in a league by himself. He needs our help. He's not going to get it from the established engineering scientific community because he's too much of a free spirit. They are afraid that he's putting out too much information that's going to compromise patents. I'm not worried about that, and I know how to get him in touch with the kind of people who won't be worried about that either. I'm so glad you brought him back here, because there are people who care, and there are people who recognize from tonight's interview that this man has within his reach a solution of biblical proportions for solving a crisis of biblical proportions. And there's only a certain kind of people that are going to be willing to reach into their grassroots pockets and give this man the money and the logistical support that he needs, he and his lovely wife, Nancy. We need to be, for John Hutchinson, what Nancy Hutchinson has proven herself to be. Not just a friend of a great genius, but a friend of all mankind and this great earth. We're going to have to figure out how to do it. Now, here's an interesting coincidence. My neighbor, a nearby neighbor of mine, was the attorney who represented the fishermen in the BP Gulf spill. The first report that I got from his partner, whom I talk to frequently, the first report was the settlement was $7.8 billion. My neighbor, after winning that case, doesn't need to work, but he still does. Now, he wants to help people. He knows the inside and outside of this case like nobody else on this planet. I am going to send to Tom the name of this law firm. I'm not going to mention it on the air. I'm only going to tell you his first name. He is the first person. His name comes up first in the list of names on this law firm. I'll just tell you his first name because it doesn't appear in my text. His first name is Jeffrey. I want you to give me about a month. I want to put some things together and lay it out for Jeffrey and his partners, and we're going to do something for John Hutchinson. I guarantee you.
All right, Michael, I'm sure John and Nancy will be delighted to hear that. Thank you very much. West of the Rocky, Richard is in Watsonville, California. Richard, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, good morning to you, Richard. I heard you do an interview several years ago with a gentleman named Leo Wanta. Do you remember that?
Indeed, I do, yes.
$27 trillion man. Was that for real or was that just...
Well, you heard it. What do you think?
What I'm saying, Richard, is I'd like to hear it again.
Well, you're in luck because at the end of the month, towards the end of the month, I'll be sitting in this chair again, and Leo Wanta will be on the program along with a film producer who has also authored the biography of Leo Wanta. So
it's an amazing story, isn't it?
Tune in. Well, you're gonna hear that again, and aspects of that story that we didn't get to the last time, and Mr. Wanta will be on the program.
Will he have the gold with him?
Will he have the gold with him?
I wonder.
Not within reach, I'm guessing. Not within reach.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Richard, thanks for checking in from Watsonville, California. First-time caller, Les, is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Les, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. First off, you're a very good substitute for George. I've enjoyed listening to you tonight.
I appreciate that. Very kind. Thank you.
The question I had, you know, and I didn't hear anybody ask the question or pose the question, and possibly you had some talk time off microphone with your guest, maybe you know, is Fukushima, can it be stopped?
Can it be stopped? Well, I think there are involved authorities over there in a very precarious undertaking, and that is to attempt to contain it. But the infrastructure, what remains of the reactors, is in such horrendous condition because of the earthquakes and the tsunami, the flooding, and so forth, that they're really kind of an impossible situation. You know, trying to put something back together that is in such horrible shape, and if they make one mistake, you know, they risk sort of spreading the contamination. So it's a little bit like, it reminds me of that game, you know, with the what was it called? You had to pull out the those long wooden skewers and hope that the whole thing didn't come tumbling down. What was that called? Kerplunk or something? I'm trying to remember, but it's that kind of a situation. You know, it's just like edge of your seat, nail biting time. And I don't know. I think, you know, they think that Chernobyl was far worse. And I know that they've sort of reconstructed the tomb, if you will, for Chernobyl, or they're in the midst of doing that. They seem to be having a little bit more success with Chernobyl than they are with Fukushima. But when you listen to doctors talking about how we are in the not too distant future going to be faced with a cancer epidemic like the world has never seen. Thyroid cancers. They're seeing a huge spike in thyroid cancers. They believe is directly linked to Fukushima. I think by the end of it, Fukushima may end up being worse than Chernobyl. And I don't know that they're going to be able to contain it, Fukushima that is, the way they seem to be doing with Chernobyl. Nearly, 30 years on, finally seem to be getting the upper hand in containing Chernobyl. The task has only just begun with Fukushima, and it seems to be far more precarious.
All right. Well, you know, one can only sit and ponder. You know, I was thinking about Chernobyl and just what little I know about it and what I've heard about it. You know, it seems like what they have done basically is they have just plugged it all up with concrete. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, but the original sort of container after the accident, it was degrading as well. And they were in the midst of sort of rebuilding it when the military conflict broke out between the Ukraine and Russia. So that's kind of put it on hold. But since, you know, things have kind of calmed down over there more or less, they've been able to reconcentrate their efforts. And my understanding is they are reconstructing that containment, that tomb or sarcophagus, if you will, this huge concrete structure. You know, is that going to solve the problem entirely? No, maybe it'll only buy us some time. But we're not there yet with Fukushima. I mean, they are still in a very dangerous situation.
It just seems like I hate to be a doomsday type of guy or a Chicken Little, but it does seem to me like this thing is so bad that in reality, it's probably going to murder this planet. I mean, it almost seems like they need to look at it from a different perspective. As maybe there needs to be and I know this sounds far-fetched, but a suicide mission, perhaps. Let the world know. Anybody with cancer who knows they're dying, has got a day's work left in them, go over there and give it up. Let them compensate your families for your efforts and see if they can't, you know, do the impossible. Because I just, from what I heard tonight, what I have heard about this in the past, this thing sounds so bad that it's, you know, living here in the United States, one of my biggest fears, if I'm going to sit around and fear something, is Yellowstone. it's
right, the supervolcano, right?
It's going to do what it's going to do whenever it's going to do it, and when it does it, it's just going to be so awful we can't fathom it. But the Fukushima thing seems to me like it's now, it's in our face, and it's way, way, way worse. I hope those people over there are thinking outside the box, because it doesn't sound like we have a whole lot of time for...
Right. Natural cataclysms, there's not much we can do about things like supervolcanoes. But Fukushima, the first thing we need to do is make sure something like this doesn't happen again. But I'm not even convinced that we're taking those steps. It seems to me like, we're building more Fukushimas around the world.
As long as we're building nuclear power plants on this planet, this is always going to be happening. This is not something that's ever going to stop happening, because we can't control the planet. We can't control what it does. And I don't know, it's just a sad case that people aren't smart enough to build these things far enough away from the potential disasters that they knew could have happened when they built Fukushima.
Mm. Les, I wish I could put a nice sugary coating on this, but I can't. I cannot. It is dire, and those are the facts. It's dire.
My concerns are not really about me. I mean, I'm 57 years old. My concerns are about the kids and the grandkids and the people that we're leaving it to. It's just sad.
100%. Thank you, Les. On that happy note, wildcard line Gary is in Santa Maria.
Oh, hi, Richard. Long time no speak with. Talked to you on May 22nd of last year, and you, your guest was Vernon Mahubble, the astrologer in Palmist, I mean.
All right.
And I was did a horrible job of explaining how mass intention works with astrology, and I wanted to try and clarify just a bit of it, because I've been doing some mass intention experiments on Coast to Coast, and they have been remarkable. But that particular day, I explained it, and there must have been more than a few in the audience that really understood it, because the intention was to just simply take Monsanto stock and have it drop down in price. And Vernon actually kind of snickered a little bit, but that was on a Friday. Monday morning, Monsanto stock dropped by $13 a share. That translated into an $8 billion with a B dollar market cap loss. And that's right. I put the chart of it up on my my YouTube channel, along with some more explanation.
And you attribute that to the power of intention rather than simply the power of Coast to Coast's vast audience voting with their feet in the stock market.
Well, Monsanto stock is 90% owned by industrial corporations, not individual holders. So
All right. Well, hey, listen, I gotta take a break here. Gary, do you want to hold on through the break? If you can, we'll get back to your call. Appreciate it. All right. Here's my favorite new band out of the UK, The Struts, and Could Have Been Me. More Open Lines when Coast to Coast continues right after this. These Dreams of You by Van Morrison, the Bard of Belfast. This is from his seminal work, Moondance. Came out about 1970, I think. And this song actually inspired by a dream Van Morrison had about Ray Charles, the great Ray Charles, or an assassination attempt against him. The song starts off with the line, "You paid your dues in Canada." Maybe that refers to me, paying my dues in Canada. I don't know. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. And we are in the midst of Open Lines. And just before the break, Gary from Santa Maria, California, was with us talking about the power of intention. And Gary, thanks for holding on. This is a short segment, so let's get right at it, and then we'll move along.
Let me be quick, cut to the chase. I would like to use you as an intention experiment, and I want your clear-cut unbiased, please, honest opinion on the information that's up on my YouTube channel, which is the actual protocols for this. It involves listening to one music video by the Goo Goo Dolls, the Rebel Beat. The name of my YouTube channel, it's in good standing, there's no gotchas there, is Rebel Insiders, all one word, plural, Rebel Insiders. Just go up there. I've got the five, six-minute videos with examples. Make sure you listen to the song and then hit the comment section. I'm probably going to get hit by trolls. I'll put up with that. But once this audience gets linked even further, more things are possible. I did this experiment 10 times with 4 different hosts. Each time, Monsanto stock dropped. Now I'm thinking about my next intention, turning to the elections. We have the Donald, the Hillary, and the Bernie. And it may be time to put our minds together and get rid of that red-headed hydra that's got itself wrapped around the Republican and the blue-headed hydra around the Democrat Party. I think we need to get the hell out of these parties, in my opinion.
Let me just stop you there. I'm not quite understanding the intent of this experiment. How does listening to a Goo Goo Dolls song on your YouTube channel impact on the power of intention and the stock market and the presidential cycle? I'm missing something.
It starts using meta liminal programming done by Warner Brothers Music Group, the Goo Goo Dolls Music Group. They're going out on tour. It will evoke metabliminal programming in everybody's mind. They did it as the final show on 90210, but the lyrics are visible. Use the lyrics part of the video, not the images. Listen with your eyes and watch it with your ears. That's called synesthesia. It's what I suffer from a brain injury that I did use a 500,000 volt Tesla coil to help me heal from, and I've done some other PK experiments that I talk about on my channel as well.
Okay, so you watch the Goo Goo Dolls video, and you infuse that with your intention to affect the stock of Monsanto.
Opens,
is that the idea?
It'll open, you'll remember things. It'll get to you by the music, by the lights, by the animation. I had nothing to do with the production. It's all Warner Brothers, but they did an excellent job to keep their audience of 90210, and then the Goo Goo Dolls 4 days later played the Preakness live at the Preakness race. So Warner Brothers knew what they were doing, but they abandoned it. Goo Goo Dolls are going back out on tour. I asked George if he could get one of them for a guest. I think it would be a good idea because they are the most paranormal group out there. But go to Rebel Insiders on the YouTube channel and just go through my little exercise and you tell me if it doesn't affect you and if you don't feel something or not.
All right. Thank you for that, Gary. I'm not sure how people who have Monsanto stock in their 401k will feel about your little power of intention experiment. However, we have the coordinates, and we have our assignment. Thank you for that, Gary. We'll get back to more of Open Lines. Richard Sarrett in for George Norrie, right here on Coast to Coast AM. West of the Rockies, Robert in Kingman, Arizona. You're on Coast to Coast AM. How are you?
Well, thank you, Richard, for taking my call.
My
pleasure. I've got a little ghost story for you to kind of change things up a little bit.
Love it. Let's have it.
Back in 1989, I had just gotten married, and my new wife and I had several odd experiences, but nothing over the top, just things makes you wonder what's going on. And so we're in our new apartment, and we'd only been there the one night, and she had made peas with dinner, and she didn't have a correct container to put them in with a snap-on lid, so she put a larger lid over a smaller container and set it in the refrigerator. The next morning when I got up, come out there, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "What? What's up?" And she opened the refrigerator and showed me the container was upside down. And the peas had not spilled. The whole thing was turned upside down. There was no way you could turn it upside down in the refrigerator. The shelves were too close together. Well, that's odd. And it made me scratch my head. I thought, okay, we got a ghost. So we had a little cat, little kitten. And every once in a while, late in the evening, he'd come tearing up on the couch, terrified, from the bedroom. So the one night, we'd been out all day, and we were tired, and we went to bed. And she was already asleep, but I was kind of half-dozing. And I was facing the wall, and I turned over to face her. And above her, the same direction as her body, is this white form. It's got its two arm-looking things reaching down around her throat. And it looked like an old woman. Now, I'd never seen a ghost before. I didn't disbelieve, but I'd never seen one before. And I reacted. I grabbed my pillow and yelled a cuss word and swung it at the, whatever it was. I said, get out of here. And it flowed over to the bathroom door, which was at the foot of the bed. The noise I made doing that woke my wife up, and she was kind of coughing and everything. She says, what, what? I said, look, standing in the bathroom door was an old woman. But you could see through her. And she was like smoke, like cigarette smoke. I jumped out of the bed, not that I'm that brave, but I've always wanted to face something like that. I'm not afraid of it. I ran over towards the bathroom doorway, and it kind of went into the bathroom. I turned the light on. There's nothing in there. So that was our experience in that.
And but your then, wife saw it as well?
Yeah, she saw it, clearly. And we were kind of scared. We stayed up all night and everything, and then nothing more happened, though. It was okay. So the apartment building we lived in was a one-story. It was kind of L-shaped. We were in apartment one, which was a small one. The people that lived in apartment three, we kind of knew them a little bit from previous time in this small town, and they were moving out, and they asked if we wanted to take over their apartment, same rent, and I said, sure. So we moved. I'm trying to make this quick. We moved into the second apartment. Well, we had two doors then. We had a front door and a back door. We'd go out yard sailing on a Saturday, we're going to come back and the back door would be open. Well, it had three locks on it, and I made sure it was locked after the first time because we had cats, and I didn't want them getting out. And this kept happening, but it wasn't spooky. It was just odd. And I thought maybe some previous occupant had a key and was coming in or something like that. There was no marks on the locks or anything like that. It wasn't broken in. It was just open. So a new neighbor moves in next door to us. And it's a young guy. And the one evening, I'm out in the front yard, and he comes out to talk to me. And we get to talking about this and that. And he says, I'm going to tell you something, and don't think I'm crazy. And I said, what's that? My wife had walked out, too. He said, I woke up last night, and there was an old woman standing at the end of my bed. He said, I grabbed my pillow and threw it at her and yelled something at her, and she vanished. And my wife and I looked at each other, kind of a smile, and we said, yeah, we already know about that. He says, it scared the heck out of me. And so we kind of all accepted that we had a ghost. And we hadn't seen her anymore after that, but I was out on a Saturday afternoon in the backyard of our apartment building working on my little Volkswagen Beetle. And right across the alley, there was a yard from a regular house, and there was an older lady that lived over there. And she had come out, and you could tell that she was a little bit crippled up and everything, and she was having a hard time getting around. And she got down in her little garden and trying to pull weeds and everything. And I glanced over a couple times, and it was a nice hot summer day, and I thought, this is crazy. I went in the house, and my wife says, what's up? And I told her what was going on. I said, I'm going to take my gloves and go over and help her. She says, wait. And she grabbed her gloves and followed me. We both went over there and jumped the fence. Of course, the woman looked at us funny, like, what are you doing? And we explained, could we do this for you? And she started smiling. She said, yeah, it's kind of hard for me to do this. And so we went ahead and pulled the weeds out and cleaned up her garden for her and made sure everything was okay. While we were doing that, she went in and made us some lemonade. And we chatted with her and got to know her name and everything. And she thanked us and everything. And so we gave it up. After we had done that, we had no more problem with the ghost. And we couldn't figure out. I didn't get the connection at first. And then I realized when we had been talking to the woman, her mother owned that house. It was right on the corner, right next to our apartment building. And the land that the apartment building was on, she had previously owned that, and the city had gotten it away from her. So we both figured out and believed that by helping her daughter, we'd placated the ghost, and, you know, I don't know if it works that way, but it did.
Well, it seemed to have did the trick this time. Wow, that's a great, great story. And you know what? I believe it. I believe it. I believe in an unseen world. I believe in a spirit world. I'm not exactly sure what these apparitions are, whether in fact you encountered the spirit of this woman's mother or it was some trickster spirit. I'm not clear on that, but I believe it. I believe you saw something. And they have a very strange sense of humor, don't they? I mean, the things that they they mess around with in our homes. Turning a container of peas over, just something subtle like that. Well, it's not so subtle when you discover it, but you know, why would a ghost do something like that? They operate on an entirely different wavelength, obviously, literally and figuratively. Mike is on the wild card line in Livermore, California. Mike, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, Richard. Wonderful to talk to you once again.
Likewise. Thank you.
I can't say I'm going to switch directions. I'd like to go politics, but not really politics, as usual. Now that it looks like the Donald is slated to be the Republican presidential candidate, who knows what the Republicans will pull at the convention to upset that, but and then Hillary on the other side. And I'm just looking at this as the swings. I mean, you look back to Clinton and what the original Clinton did, Bill, and his, you know, the biggest thing that happened probably was gutting the military at that time and sending us in a direction. And what I'm talking about is who's controlling all this, not so much the Democrat or the Republican Party or even political ideologies, because I'm past that. I went through my stage of political ideologies. And once you figure out that it doesn't matter, the guys in control are going to send it in which direction. So I'm just kind of curious, is your take on all of this with the Bilderbergs and everything else, what direction are they looking at? I mean, this is really strange. I mean, Hillary isn't even liked by a lot of the people in her party. And there the evidence is Bernie Sanders. I mean, most people aren't communists or socialists, but they're willing to vote for Bernie Sanders over Hillary because she's just the epitome of the political system. And Donald Trump, who is supposedly on the outside of the political system, but the guy has been in the middle of it all of his life, just on the other side of it. He buys the politicians. He buys the lobbyists to get what he wants.
Well, he buys the soap salesman, but he's not, as far as I can tell, in my humble opinion, as an outsider here, sitting up here in Canada, he's not part of the system. He's not part of what I call the equestrian class.
Well,
he's not in that company. Yes, he buys the soap salesman, and he uses them, Republican, Democrat, for his own purposes as a businessman, which is what you would expect a businessman to do. But I don't think he's part of that elite class, which is why he represents such a threat. In the same way that Reagan, although Reagan was a little bit more of, you know, as a political insider, being governor of California, he was still perceived as a wild card, which is why I believe they sort of foisted George Herbert Walker Bush on him as his vice president, just to kind of keep an eye on him. Mitt Romney was kind of perceived as a bit of an outsider, but again, not to the extent that Donald Trump is. Trump is a total wild card, and he has, my view is that not only in the United States, but even here in Canada, the system is designed for continuity. So it doesn't matter. The idea of a political party, I think, is an illusion. The idea that we have three political parties up here in Canada or a two-party system in the United States, it's an illusion. It's baked into the equation for continuity. So it doesn't matter who is the occupant at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. You'll notice it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, the foreign policy rarely changes. But that could change with either Bernie or Trump in the White House. In fact, I'm quite confident that either of those two gentlemen would do their utmost to change things in a very dramatic way, and that is why both of them are such a threat to the established order. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I have to agree with you 100%. It's refreshing to hear somebody else say what I'm thinking, you know, in the sense that exactly right. I don't think you're right. What I meant about Donald being an insider was just in the fact that he knows how the system works, but he's definitely not establishment, and that's where it comes down to, is establishment and what do they want. And it's really tough to figure out that I'm almost, my biggest worry is that if Donald Trump got in, or Donald Trump being in the race is almost there to throw it for Hillary, in a sense, that a Republican may have beat Hillary, or probably easily would have beat Hillary, just because of the way the swings go from left to right, and what they want to push through, what the agenda is, the people who control the money, and the ones who are pushing this, what their agenda is they want to go left or right. And I think at this point, they want to go a little bit more right. And my worry is that Donald is there to just be a disruptor to get Hillary in. Not that I think that that's who he is. I think he believes what he believes, whatever that is. And the funniest thing of it all is, you know, the greatest quote that I've ever heard was Jerry Garcia. And he says, voting for the lesser of two evils is still voting for evil. And I think that's what this election is all about.
Well, another great Jerry Garcia line, I think, which is most appropriate for this election cycle. What a long, strange trip it's been.
You couldn't have written a better script for the 2016 election.
I tell you, it is great, a great spectator sport, and it is historical. I don't believe that Trump is in there as some sort of a spoiler in order to help, you know, Hillary get elected. I think the enmity between Trump and the Clintons is real. I think the enmity now between, I know at one time Trump was close with the Bush family, that's out the window, and the Bush hold on the Republican Party, where Bush Republicanism is dead. This is no longer the Republican Party. It is now the Trump Party. How far will he take it? Well, we'll find out soon enough. It's going to be a wild ride. I'll guarantee you that much. All right. Back with more of Coast to Coast and Open Lines. Richard Serrett in for George Norrie. Stay a while.